Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Attack of Opportunity. We have had a look at ourselves. We have had a look at a lot of podcasters, most of them from other actual play podcasts, playing both D&D, playing Starfinder, playing a crap ton of Pathfinder, because, you know, that is our jam. We have looked at music creators that offer a lot of free and subscribed content on the net for your games. Where do we go from here? What's a resource we haven't tapped? Recently, Frog God Games reached out to me. Oh, I was so excited. I don't have to go digging through Twitter going, please be on my show. Someone actually contacted me from Frog God Games and said, we got a guy. And this writer has so much on the go, so much talent. And we want to show him to the world kind of thing. And I said, well, yeah, bring him on. And that was months ago, back and forth. It is a lot of work. Like when you actually do the agent thing and an agent talks to your agent, your people talk to my people. There's a lot of back and forth through proxies. But I finally got my hands on him. Would you please welcome an independent freelance writer currently working for Frog God Games and possibly somebody else. I don't know if he's allowed to talk about that yet. Mr. Tom Knoss, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So, you know, the first question we here at Attack of Opportunity live. Yep, that's right. Show's live now. No pee breaks, no running off. I guess, you know, the type of thing. Well, we'll see if we can't go through. No, that's not true. If you we could do some kind of big time out thing. Some of our mega fans. Hello, everyone out there are already in the chat with nothing better to do but hang out with us, and perhaps they'll actually flip me some free questions. That is always encouraged for Tom when we are digging into the meat of things. But first, the question that we always like to ask everyone here is, when did you first know you were a geek, a nerd, one of us?
Oh boy, I would probably say when I was about 10 or 11. So I remember we were at a friend's house, and there were some, she had a friend who had more kids, and they came from New York City. I'm from New Jersey. And they said, we have this game. Everyone's playing in school. It's called Dungeons and Dragons. Do you guys want to play it? And we're like, okay. So we played it. And from then we were just like hooked on it. So, I try and date this event, and I still can't, because I'm not really sure if I was still in grammar school or if I was in junior high. So I'm guessing it's probably around 1979. 1980, somewhere in that range. And since then, I just got into the game. I got into playing. I got into other games. I was also an athlete too, although I have to admit it, I was a hockey player for a long time. So I would say I've been into gaming for about 40 years.
You know, it's funny, coming out of the late 70s, early 80s as a gamer out of school like myself, there was that stigma, and you almost feel the right going, oh, but you know, I ran outside and played, you know, trying to break that sort of like writers cage themselves. You have the otaku life. It's not true. It's not true. I had a childhood of cross country skiing and swimming because you just crossed the street into the river we went, that kind of thing. Like, but I guess that's just gone now, the 80s and the 90s, where they were just like, go outside.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, we were let loose pretty much on the neighborhood. Yeah, know, so
before the bad men and the word pedo and everything came, there's like out, you know, outside Saturday, you know, cartoons you had from 6 a.m. till 12 o'clock, the only cartoons, right. And then out the door, right. And then after, right. School, it's like you're home. You're, you know, streetlights come on. I gotta get home. I'll be in shape.
Yeah, we were latchkey kids. Right, latchkey kids. We used to call it.
So you're in grammar school, as you're saying. Was there a defining moment, though, besides your friends roping you and just looking for a social event? Was there something that hooked you more, that had you delve deeper, where you went from playing with buddies to really getting into it, like a video game, cosplay, card games, TV movies were my gateway drug? Is there anything else that was substantial as those years tick by, where it went from kind of to always, this is going to happen all the time, you know?
Yeah, you know, I kind of progressed through being in the 80s. You know, you went through those sword and sorcery movies at the time, you know, that, you know, the, I guess the gateway one was Hawk the Slayer, which I actually looked at recently and was like, oh my God, I can't believe I like this. And then that one, and then there was Beastmaster, and then there was Sword and the Sorcerer. And then there was the old, I don't remember the name of what they called it. The animated Lord of the Rings movie, was it Kaleidoscope or Kaleidoscope it was filmed in? Or it just had that very strange look to it. So, you know, I got into the movies, and I have to admit, I am a writer for RPGs. And other than the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, I've never read a fantasy book ever. Not that I think they're bad or anything. I was an English major in college, so I was stuck reading so many other books that I just simply didn't have the time to do it. But it was just, you know, playing in the games, reading the material, you know, reading the second edition material, because most people who are newer to the games don't realize that, may or may not realize actually, that TSR had pretty much control over all of the Dungeons and Dragons materials. So, you know, everyone dreamed of, well, I'm going to send in something to a magazine, to Dragon Magazine at the time, and maybe they'll get it published or and that. So I just kept up with the materials. I kept up with the second edition stuff. And then when the OGL came along in 2000 and all these companies just started putting out these open calls, I said, well, all right, let me give this a shot. I've been a GM. I've written my own adventures for years, and let's see what happens with it. And I sent the first one in, and they said, okay, we'll accept it. Here's $10. I'm like, woohoo, I got $10. And then it was like another company said, oh, send an adventure idea. Oh, we like this. Can you write it? Sure, I can write it. And they published it, and it just kept kind of mushrooming from then. Once you got like the first couple credits, it was a lot easier to get your foot into the door other places. And then it just kept, you know, taking off, building up, building up, building up. And, you know, here I am now 20 years later, and I've probably written 35 or 40 different RPG products, most of them solo, some of them with other people. And it's just crazy to look back and see how it started for such humble origins of just, you know, responding to a few open calls and getting accepted. And from there, it was like, okay, I can really do this. And it, that's pretty much the long and the short of it for me for getting into the writing part of this business.
I think you're the first guest that actually kept me quiet for a good 5 minutes in a row. So bravo to you. I'm bursting here because you're making things and it's like, no, don't interrupt. I usually do, don't interrupt. Hawk the Slayer has come up in other recent interviews, believe it or not. As dated a B-class that movie is, it's come up a lot and we've ranted about it, so I won't pre-rant. But for those of you that know, including you, Tom, you know how awesome that is. As far as TSR goes, TSR was the company before it was called Wizards of the Coast. And again, I love it when somebody dates themselves like that because it just means I'm not the oldest guy in the room for once. You talked about your writing up until now. What about gaming? What about, you know, being the proverbial gamer playing at the table? You started when you were in grammar school. Was there a break? Like, was there, you know, all through high school, I put it down, then got back into college or whatever. Was there any kind of gap where you could reset and then you got, again, jumped headlong into it? Or have you always been doing it?
I've always been doing it. We actually have played with pretty much the same group of people for the last 35 years, which is pretty amazing from all the stories I've heard, because I thought everyone was kind of like that. But we all pretty much stayed in the same area, and one of the groups has played together with a few new additions and a few people who left over the years, but the core has been the same for a long time. And the second group that I played with when I was like in high school, we were on a bit of a hiatus, and about 10 years ago, some of us who are still in the one core group, we're parts of that second group. So we've kind of reached out to others who were in the group and they wanted to come back, and we've been playing again. Revived that game ever since. So I've never had a hiatus from gaming. I've had a hiatus from writing. I stopped writing a little bit when that edition I won't mention came out and didn't have an OGL. And I didn't know where the industry was going until Paizo came out with Pathfinder. But otherwise, continuously gaming and playing Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder, or, you know, occasionally other games too, you know. But most of those, you know, we're short term, 3 to 4 months, and then we would move back to playing Dungeons and Dragons again.
Well, if you'd happen to scratch your forehead like this with a number of fingers that may or may not represent said edition, then I think that's fair game. All right. Well, I won't trap you there. So the inspiration to write was always there. Did you cover that? It's just you dug in so quickly. It's just like, wait, did I actually ask you, was there the inspiration to start writing? You've been doing for a while, I guess. I guess my question is, what was the inspiration to actually bravely put something together and try to get it published? And did it get published? Because one of our chat here in the group wants to know, you know, what your first title was that you wrote. So I'm assuming you're probably saying, what's the first thing you got published?
Yeah, the first thing I got published was a submission to an old Bastion Press 3.0 book called Arms and Armor. So they were looking for various types of weapons and armor. I submitted like maybe six of them, and I can't imagine they were more than a couple 100 words or a couple 100 words each, and I think all of them got accepted. So that was the first thing. Yeah, I was I started writing very early. My dad was an English teacher, so growing up we were always corrected on our grammar. So if I walked around and said, I feel good, you were told, no, you feel well. lasted as long as I lived at home. So I was always encouraged to write. And I felt that I write adventures, and when I would go to conventions before I would get published, people would come up and say like, oh, that was really great. I really enjoyed it. You play locally. Can I join your group? I had a lot of fun. And kind of like when that started, it was kind of like, eh, maybe I am pretty good at this. So that's when I kind of said, let me start sending this stuff around and see what happens.
So how long, you said you started playing, right? I think something, a part we skipped over is how long you've been GMing. Because if you're DMing, then the homebrew itch can start. And then your writing gets tested on, you know, the folks that you're around the table with. Did you get into DMing right away?
Yeah, I probably DM'd the next time. The first time I played, I probably DM'd the next session I was in. So I was kind of like,
I feel we have a lot in common, Tom. I was so bad. The first thing I ever played was, I think it was called the Caves of Chaos for basic D&D. And the DM went for the bathroom break, and I heard that he had like a map. And I wasn't trying to cheat. I just really like cartography. And I peeked over, and there was that old blueprint style map with the grid laid in it, and I was just like, oh, that's so cool. I want to be on this side, you know, I can do this type of thing. He came back, they squealed on me, I got in so much shit. No, he was really cool about it. He said, actually, I wouldn't mind playing, I think you'd be really good at this. And then I started training under him, and there was this history. But my point is, whether you're happen, you know, you can't contain yourself, or you're just like, oh guys, I got this type of thing, the DMing and the player aspect. Do you ever switch back? Do you ever try to play under someone just for a change of pace? Or are you just at that point where, you know, your players are like, you're the guy, and it feeds your creativity? Because for me, once you're in the big chair, it's really hard. It was always hard for me to give it up. I enjoy playing, and we've got games now where I'm going to be playing with guys, and they're actually going to be podcasts. But I love the big chair, the screens, the, you know, the telling of the story, not the not shutting up part. Some people might be, it's the power, but no, it's just, knowing what's going to happen, that kind of thing. Do you ever struggle with that? Do you actually find that the writing side, the GM side, switch to player side for perspective?
Typically when I play home games, I'm typically a player. And it's not, you know, because one preference or not, it's simply, I just have so much to do in the writing avenue that I don't think I would really give you a very fair game, because I just don't have the time to prep it the way I would want to prep it and the way I would feel comfortable prepping it. I do like the DM cons, and the reason is it gives me a chance to test new material that I'm putting together. And I really like to do the con because it gives me a chance to introduce new players to not only our products, but sometimes to the game itself. Last time I went up to Total Con, which is in Massachusetts, I had a game of 6 players, and 5 of them have never played Dungeons & Dragons before. They were all brand new. And they had a whole bunch of new rules, because the product I'm working on had a bunch of new variants and stuff like that. And so I said to them at the beginning, I said, look, I'm not here to kill you. I'm not here to make your life, you know, make your con experience miserable. I'm here to have fun. We're here to play test this. You know, it's not a pure play test. So if you do something mind-numbingly stupid, you might get killed. But I'm not here with an active agenda to, you know, end your character after 20 minutes, because I want to see how the character works, because I designed a lot of things for it. So I find those experiences to be really enjoyable, because it's new for the players and it's new for you, because you don't know these folks and they don't know you. And when you play with the same group and you know the same people, you know their tendencies, you know how they're thinking, you know what's going through their mind, and they know what's going through your mind. And it makes it a little, I don't want to say jaded. It just makes it something somewhat predictable at times. And when you play with people who you don't know and you've never played with before, it adds that unpredictability to it, because I don't know what they're going to do, and they don't know my style, and they don't know what I'm going to do. So that's typically the way I do things, because for a con game, I will have the time to prep it, because I have to run 2 or 3 sessions, and it's something I wrote and it's something I was doing anyway. So that's pretty much the gist of it. So it's not so much giving up the big chair, it's so much as a lot of times it's the time constraints. I just don't have the time to put something together that I think would be fair to the players.
You say you play more often than GM. So as a player, do you have a favorite class, race, or alignment, which is your go-to? But I also have to ask, again, thanks to the chat here, what is your favorite go-to creature to use in either your writing or GMing?
My favorite go-to creature, I like to create not amoral, that's the wrong word I'm looking for. And kind of like ambiguous villains. So I would say my favorite is to just create a person, whether it's a humanoid of some type. I'm not as keen on, I mean, I like to use the monsters, obviously, but if I want to create a really remarkable villain, I will usually pick a human or an elf or another humanoid race.
Oh yeah, no, the monologue at the end is, "Yo, you found me," but haha, you pull the lead, like, you know, because you get some more interaction. Well, think of it, like, right. Monsters are like, ah, and it's like, ah, this is gonna kick your butt, you know.
Right. But well, I like intelligent monsters. I don't like putting just this, you know, a brutish boom boom boom, you know, Mongo smash, dun 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 dun. No, I'm not too big into that. You know, I would prefer something that's actually a thinking monster. So, you know, a lich. A Medusa, something, you know, that has a lot of intelligence and a lot of charisma too, that can, you know, draw you into its web and, you know, deceive you and then, you know, turn the tables on you, make you realize that you're the ones, you know, who are being hunted. You're not the hunters anymore.
Cool. What about you playing like a go-to class or favorite race that you're always fond of?
I almost always get volunteered into being the wizard or the sorcerer. Because most players that I play with prefer to, you know, be the tank, as they refer to it, or to be the rogue. And I don't want to be dealing with those pesky spells and that stuff. You handle that. You know, you write them. You know what to do. You figure it out. So I pretty much get volunteered into being the wizard or the sorcerer.
And you could be the evil sorcerer, the intelligent monsters among you, right?
Yep.
I always wanted to do that. Just play along with them, and then you get to the DM, and you're at the last boss fight, and it's all minions, and then there's no boss, and they're all looking around going, what do you want to do? And there's more minions that come out, and they just turn to that player and go, what are your orders, boss? As they have the party and you surround, and he just steps back and does the big, you know, Scooby-Doo Jenkins.
Yes, Scooby-Doo!
Because for me, I love shapeshifters. I like the doppelganger, the Burgeist and stuff. You think you're dealing with one thing, the Kitsune. I even got something going in one of our, you know, just... and it's not because for the sneak attack aspect, it's not that, you know what I mean? It's because you get to do a parallel with the monster, or they're a lot harder to catch because they could step into a crowd and be gone. And it's a great reoccurring villain, you know, and for talking about creating tension where they're out there, they could be anybody, you know, you really get players on their toes with a shapeshifter kind of thing. That's my go-to, but enough about me. I also wanted to ask you about, you know, where does the magic happen? Where are you? Are you in the States, in North America? You know, do you have like this big den? Are we looking at the wall of RPG behind you there?
Yeah. Yep. You're looking at the wall of my office. So I'm in New Jersey, pretty close to New York City. So, you know, that's where it happens. I work in here. Most weekends, you know, the unglamorous life of a RPG writer is long nights and long days. There could be weekends where I'm here 20 hours. Easily. If I'm working on something and I have a deadline, you know, I could easily work on from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. at night. That's not unusual. So, you know, but you do it, you know, you do it because you want to do it, and you do it because you enjoy doing it. You know, so sometimes it doesn't feel like a job, you know. Granted, I get paid, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't feel that way. You
when
know?
You have the inspiration, you're excited about something with a fresh idea or something's panning out well, it just, you know, the pen scribbles, right? But then you get to the bogged down part where you're doing logistics or you're just doing something that doesn't interest you but has to be paged out, and then the hours start going by. Or if you have some kind of block where, like, you know what you want to do, you know what you got to do, you know what the client wants, and I have 3 days and nothing. 2 days, step, and they'll do all that writer stuff. Step away, go for a walk, all that. Okay, you're burning time. You know, you can't stare at the page, that wastes time. You can't take the type of thing. So I've personally, people are like, oh, why writers, you know, like, why is this, what's this deadline? They had a week, they had a, yeah, but they may not, you know, get that oomph for the inspiration that's really good writing or worth paying them for until the last minute. Do you find that a lot? Like you were just saying, like, the type of thing, or do you have a way of staging it out? Are, you know, are clients that generous with time, or they're just like, we need this Monday and you're getting this email Friday night kind of thing?
I don't have that issue for Frog God. They generally, I have pretty much, the one thing I enjoy a lot is that I don't have somebody looking over my shoulder. You know, I've done a lot of stuff for them for the last 8 years. So I think I've built up some credibility that I don't have to be, you know, turning over a chapter at a time to make sure I'm doing something. So I do have that luxury, and that's something I really appreciate. But, you know, I used to be the person in college who got an assignment and I did it the next day because I didn't like waiting. I didn't like to sit and procrastinate it until everyone else made a rush to the library to get the same books that you were, because you were writing on a very limited topic, and you knew there was only a handful of books, and you knew they'd be all gone if you waited till the last day. So I would just get on it right away. And that's the same philosophy I apply to you know, this career is. Once I get something, I start working on it. I don't put it off. You know, I will obviously, you know, flesh out the ideas I want to present in it, and I'll do that quickly. But, you know, I don't like waiting to the last minute to do things. It just, it puts more pressure on me, and the more pressure on me, the nastier I get and the more unpleasant I am to be with. So my wife insists that I do things quickly and not do that.
The villains are meaner. The creatures are far more agitated than your script. It's bad for everybody, right?
Yes, it's bad for everybody.
So how long have you been creating this content? How, like, because our angle in the show, obviously, is we're interviewing some type of content creation. I got to find a niche. So like, okay, we talk to content creators, whether it is writing or actual play pods or whatever. Did we date when you first got published? Like, how long have you been officially a content creator? Some might argue it's like when he wakes up in the morning, if you're a writer and all you do is write, doesn't matter if you're published or not, you're a writer. And right. My English teacher in grade 12 OEC told me that. I thought that was profound. You know, like, you are what you do. You don't need to be published. If you get up and you need to write first thing in the morning, you have an idea, you got to jot it down, you're a writer. Poof. Doesn't matter if you, whatever you do to pay the bills, you know, that kind of thing. But just, you know, just for argument's sake, how long have you been creating this wonderful content? And let's start talking about, you know, what we've got here. Get some lovely pictures about some of your stuff here.
Okay. Actually, for myself, I've been writing probably since I was 7 years old. So since I learned how to read and write, I think I started writing almost immediately. So I would say I'm going to have to date myself. That's about 46 years. So almost 50. So yeek. actually published 2000. So it's been 20 years.
Okay. Yeah. So, drawing your attention to this side of the screen, and for the podcasting audience, I'll actually have you rate the title. I have an awesome picture here, and I would have to say this is a deep forest or jungle with that light break coming back through and illuminating a cleared yet sort of Celtic overgrown circle that still could be something between Celt with stones and moss or possibly, you know, your jungle floor. And it's called Tahalt. Is this what I'm pronouncing this properly?
It's pronounced Tual.
Tual. Okay.
Yeah. So what you're looking at is a new expansion, setting expansion for the World of the Lost Lands, which is Frog God Games campaign setting. We have the main book, which is the World of the Lost Lands. I helped write it. I wrote a good portion of it, probably about 60,000 words of that. But that's a big monster. That's like probably 500,000 in total. So this is an expansion to that. And this is a very Mesoamerican themed setting. So the book you're looking at is the cover that was drawn by Colin Chan. That is a calendar. So you'll probably see the skull in the middle of it. That's what it is intended to describe. So it is the main book for what will be a Kickstarter that's hopefully launching this week. I don't know. Kickstarter seems to be dragging their feet for some reason. But it will provide you insight onto the people, the faiths, the equipment, the traditions, customs, laws, and an overall gazetteer of this entire expansion to the World of the Lost Lands. So in terms of size, one of the questions people ask me is, how big is it? It's probably the size of a Midwestern state. So it's not a tiny island in, like, you know, Aruba, but it's not Australia either. So it would probably be like the size of Kansas in the middle of an ocean. So
cool. And this this other title we got here, where we have a Maztecian gentleman, because you can see the very distinct Maztec type pyramid, which is the sort of, I don't want to call it like a Jenga block as opposed to the smooth edge, you know, Egyptian style, in the background, sort of a grassland going on. And this guy is jumping in the air with the shield and the tomahawk, and he's going to town on a creature that looks like a hyena man, a jaguar man. What am I looking at here?
That's a gnoll, and it's a pili is the weapon he would be using. So that would be an Aztec axe that would normally be made of stone with wood and would be tethered to it. But in some variations, you were able to use bronze to make that weapon as well. So that is the adventure book that accompanies the main book. There are currently three adventures in it. One of them is written by me. One of them is written by Rob Banning, who did a lot of work for Wright Publishing. He did some stuff for Frog God. And the other is written by Tim Hitchcock. And if you are Pathfinder fans, you should know Tim. He did a lot of work for Paizo, and he did Kingmaker, which is a big one. So every time I have him on a show, someone says, oh, I love Kingmaker so much. It was my favorite Pathfinder adventure. I'm so glad you made it. So we each wrote one of the adventures, and the stretch goals are to unlock another adventure by Tim and Rob. So they did those adventures. In addition, for this Kickstarter, there's going to be two add-ons, and this is going to show you how corny I can be and nostalgic as well. One of them is called Maze and Monsters, M-A-I-Z-E, which is an old play on the Tom Hanks movie from you date, if you go back, Jeff, you know what I'm talking about.
I do. A very young Tom Hanks comes down with the psychosis that he just, to escape reality, he becomes his character, and his, you know, his mind kind of gets trapped in the character. And that just came out that really great time around what they called the satanic panic in the States. And you know, yes, that movie really helped push, really enlightened. No, it didn't.
I didn't. So that's one of the adventures, and the other one is called The Hidden Shrine of Tomokanats, which is basically the old homage to the C1, the Hidden Shrine of Temoichan.
Oh, I love that one.
I jumbled my name up.
Where you saw a naiad for the very first time.
Uh-huh.
The naiad didn't exist besides lore and Wikipedia. It's the first time TSR used it. And you go in this cave, and she's swimming around, and she's got her shawl, which is a shard of her soul, and they're evil. Well, this one was. Uh-huh. And you're like, you know, you literally have the DM going, hey, hot tub time. You know, and the players are just going, this is too easy, you know, that kind of thing. we had my wife and I actually looked that up recently and found, just through a tidbit, that it was one of the first times TSR naiad, and it also is the one that has the miniature. Tell me that's the one that has the miniature city in it, and you get to do the Indiana Jones bit.
You know, I don't remember it too much. All I remember, the main thing I remember was one thing, is that you had it came, unlike Tomb of Horrors, it came with a little flip art book, and it was really more of the art that drew me into it more so than the adventure itself. Cause I remember playing the adventure, or I remember I did it. The exact details escape me cause it was so long ago, but I still remember to this day, the art book. And I was like, oh wow, this art is really cool. I mean, this culture is really amazing. Look at this, you know, and I know it's not Aztec or Mayan. It's kind of like an idealism of them. But when I saw it, I was like, oh wow, it's really intriguing. And I always wanted to, you know, learn more about that culture and learn more about those people, and that's why we ended up doing this book, Tawal, is I was given the chance to do what I wanted to do, and this was what I wanted to do. And drawing some inspiration from C1 and the old deities and demigods book, where they had the Central American mythos deities in it, and that was also very interesting, and that kind of led me down this rabbit hole to decide to do this project.
Did you ever play a Serpent Skull, Pathfinder's Adventure Path, with big Wagwag Expanse jungle, you know, straight up?
No, I have not, but I believe Tim wrote one of the adventures in that path.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. I can check it out afterwards or do a quick Google search, but I'm pretty sure he wrote one of them. Because this came up in another one too. Someone mentioned they were playing, no, it wasn't Serpent Skull, it was something else. I'm sorry, but odds are he probably wrote one of them.
He's the guy. Like, it's funny. I've never, like, I understand your relationship with fellow writers and, of course, writing teams, you know, to get the job done. It's almost like a follow. Can we get him on the show? It's almost like a follow. You come, you know, Tom just talked about you endlessly in his interview. Get him on here. Kind of thing.
I could talk to him. He probably would.
He'd probably just talk about you. It's okay. So
he wouldn't.
He'd just go on about you, and we're right back where we started.
He wouldn't.
Sure, I have all these Pathfinder titles on my belt, but Tom, no, this guy, you know, that guy. Let's get into a personal. I'd like to say, like, you know, I'd like to ask these a couple of questions. As a freelance writer, you don't necessarily have your own brand. You write for other brands.
Correct.
Right. So yes. I'm assuming that Frog God Games has their own swag, has their own merchandise that you can find out there. But what about talking to you personally? Can you take on projects? Do you have, like, where can we find you on social media, either to tell you how great your writing is, how much they enjoyed your adventures, you know, that type of thing? Are you on Twitter, Facebook, you know, that type of thing? And if you have these links, of course, send them along, and we will put these links in the bio. But starting with your Kickstarter project, does it have a special title? What is, you know, like, is it the Tawal Kickstarter? Like, let's talk about that.
Yeah, it's Lost Lands Tawal. Unfortunately, like I said, Kickstarter's been kind of dragging their feet, so I don't have the preview page, but my peeps will get your peeps the preview page once it comes out.
Okay.
So you'll have that. You can find me on Facebook. I'm under my own name. It's Tom Knaus. If you search and you find a little... are you into What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show?
I don't think I know that one.
Okay.
It's
a mockumentary about these four vampires that live in Staten Island. And it was based on a film, a New Zealand film, by the same name, What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, and, I've heard of that. Yes. I've heard of that. One guy's really gregarious and another. Yeah, okay.
Yes. So my profile picture is Nandor, one of the vampires, holding a little pink toy. So you can find me there. I I could, again, I can message you the link. I'm predominantly on Facebook. I don't do Twitter. And correct me if I'm wrong. The people, my friends who are on Twitter, are like, should I get a Twitter? And like, no. I'm like, okay, I'll take your word for it. So predominantly you can find me on Facebook. We also have a large Discord presence. So if you're on Discord, Frog God Games has our own server. We are pretty active there. I am active there. A few of the other writers for Frog God Games are on there pretty frequently. So you can keep in touch with us through Discord. And
oh, do they have a promotional section? We could actually take this interview and put it right there and go, guys, look, we interviewed one of our own.
Yeah. Just if you just get that to John, he can do that for us. Sure. Yeah, we can do that. Frog God also has our own Facebook page. I don't know if we have Twitter. Again, I'm not on Twitter, so I don't know. But we also have our own Instagram page as well. So, but our primary source of contact for fans is through Facebook.
Okay.
So you can reach us there and reach me there.
One of the personal questions I like to ask also option is, what do you do for a living? You know, have you got to a point where this love of writing, you know, pays the bills, or do you have a 9-to-5 and you've got to cram this on top of it?
I have a 9-to-5 and I have to cram this on top of it.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah. Basically I'm a quasi lawyer is the best way to describe it. So I am a chief steward of a public employees union. So I represent the employees in various proceedings. So the lawyers who work there say I sound more like a lawyer than they do when I start speaking and going into my legalese and saying, according to subset chapter, article 13, section 4 of the contract, it states blah, 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 blah. And, you know, you didn't do this and you didn't do that. And da, 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 da. So that is what I do for my 9-to-5 job. So I live in a very expensive area, New Jersey. It's not cheap. So no, you could not live on an RPG salary in my area. You know, some people do, some people manage it, but most of them who do live in areas that allow you to do so, that are not as expensive as this area. So,
well, you might think your answer is long-winded, but you've actually covered several other questions. You talked about your meeting with at the conventions. Of course, good luck with that now with everything being locked down, but
yeah.
We talked about merchandise, but that, again, that's not your brand through Frog God Games and everything. So you're hoping, fingers crossed, you know, with the Kickstarter, but what about the future? Have you got something on the horizon that, you know, once you get that up and going, because I'm assuming that you're not writing that is published and now you're trying to get it out there, you're already sort of scribbling on the next thing, and could we possibly hear about a sneak peek about that?
Unfortunately, I do not have my next Frog God assignment because there are still some bits and pieces I have to tie together for Tual. So there's some you know, last minute running around and changing and adding things here and there. I will give you a little sneak peek of a sidelight I am doing, and my little sidelight, which I will probably form my own little company to do, is a card game. So this card game will not have anything to do with fantasy role-playing, unfortunately. It'll be more in the genre of Cards Against Humanity and Super Fight and Red Flags, but it is not going to be a version of them. So I'm not doing that. I'm doing something completely new that's using some of the ideas from that and also adding a little bit of a strategy to a party game. So it'll still be very lighthearted and it'll be very fun. I've actually play tested it a few times and the play testers enjoyed it. They thought it was really hysterical. You know, suggested some tweaks, so that's fine because that's what play testing is all about, to see what, you know, works and what doesn't work as well. So I'm hoping I can get that thing all rolling and getting it ready to go, hopefully by the end of the year. You know, at least have a prototype, and then I'll, well, I do have a prototype now that I'm playtesting, but to have a real professional looking, you know, prototype instead of playing cards with the words written on them. So
Yeah. That's great. You got to tell us a message and tell us about it. You know, when it's out, send us an email so we can say, hey, there you go. You know, because I remember when Cards Against Humanity came out and it took off like wildfire. And now it's almost like a household name, but a lot of people played it to death. So it's time for something new, light and adult and humorous. And it's going to come from, we've been talking to Tom Canas, one of the many talented writers and freelance writers that work for Frog God Games. It has been a distinct pleasure talking with you, sir, and we will see you all next time on Attack of Opportunity. You say you sound like a lawyer. You say you sound like a lawyer, but, you know, could you just say like Bueller three times really slow for me? Because that'll be the given. That'll be the
Bueller.
Awesome.